Hello everyone, it's Thursday, March 1st, 2018, and the market's just closed down 420 points. February was certainly a crazy ride, and as promised, I wanted to provide context as to what's going on. But the first thing I really want to stress is I don't mean for any of this to come across as boastful or as arrogant or, you know, I told you so. That's really not what I'm trying to go for, because I really, at the end of the day, have a lot of empathy for what I think may be coming. And as most of you know, I'm pretty outspoken on numerous issues. Which means I tend to leave myself vulnerable at times because I say what I'm thinking, and I'm not right 100% of the time, but I also want everybody to know I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking this either. And most advisors, they're simply just going to read headlines, tell you what they've been told to say, because they know if they deviate from the mainstream narrative and are wrong, then there's a price to pay. However, if you do what everybody else is doing and you're wrong, then you can just, you know, sort of throw your hands up in the air and say, you know, how could anybody have known this, or who could have predicted this? And, you know, it's sort of safer for most people just to kind of go with the flow. But ultimately, there's, you know, more than one way to accomplish the same goal. So it's really always been my goal to use certain risk management techniques to make sure all of you can live out your phase two of your life, which is, you know, people refer to as retirement or work optional lifestyles, to do whatever it is that is your purpose. So if I point back to something I said 12 months ago, it's not coming from a place of, yeah, you know, I told you so. It's coming from a place of, you know, what I said 12 months ago or 2 years ago may have sounded outlandish, but, you know, give it enough time and usually whatever I say, you know, usually then becomes passe or even, duh, well, that's just how things are going. But I know, I do know I'm talking about people's livelihoods. I'm talking about people's life savings. And when you're talking about someone's livelihood and life savings, you want to make sure that they have that they can see a track record. And more importantly, you want to make sure that that's, you know, a good track record, because, you know, ultimately you just need to be right 51% of the time to, you know, be able to really carry out your goals. And, you know, even Warren Buffett has a similar quote to that effect. But, you know, I'm hoping that the percentage is much higher than 51, and it's so that way you all can have better futures, better livelihoods because of it. It's not just, you know, prove that I'm right. I don't care about being right. I care about you. I care about your goals. I care about your passions. And I really want to protect those dreams to the best of my ability. Because what we are talking about are serious issues. And what I want to do now is give sort of an update of an off-the-cuff, this will be an off-the-cuff presentation from something that I gave, 14 months ago, called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News. But this is going to be updated, and really I want to counter the narrative that you're going to hear from most advisors, or the narrative you're going to hear from CNBC, because I think there's a lot of things that people out there in the financial media are promulgating, and I think a lot of it, they don't know what they're talking about. And so I'm going to kind of present the counter argument with, you know, facts and graphs and all this other stuff. And again, if you guys, so right now that website, you guys can see thelibertyadvisor.com. Right now, that's just a click funnel where people who watched my presentation down in Acapulco could then go and sign up to have a chat with me. But for right now, until I'm legally on board with Innovative Wealth, it's just sort of a placeholder. So that will be, I'm sort of using this as a test ground for the green screen. So I know it looks sort of funky in the bottom left and right hand corners, but, you know, still trying to work with this. I'm not a media mogul or a Hollywood producer, but anyways, let's. All right. So when it comes to market valuations, one of the valuations people use is called the Shiller PE ratio. So PE ratio stands for price over earnings. And the cliff notes of this is the higher the ratio, essentially the more expensive a stock is. So if you had the average is 16. So anytime it's above 16, it's going to be relatively more expensive. Anytime it's below 16, it's going to be a good deal. So right now it's sitting at 32.47. So we're looking at double the average rate. Last year when I gave this presentation, it was sitting at 27. So it's even higher now than it was last year. Now that's only one metric. Now there's, this is a chart I see from Zero Hedge where there's 20 different metrics that they use, and 18 out of the 20 are above the average, meaning that things are relatively more expensive. Now, the reason why that's important is because, and let me make sure that I've got the right chart pulled up, is that when you look at forward 10-year returns, and what that means is the return you could expect to get if you were to carry this out over 10 years. Whenever you're in the most expensive, so over here, we're looking at that fifth quintile. it means that the 10-year return has only been 4%. So we're in this range right now. Now, a lot of pension funds are assuming that, you know, they're acting like we're over here, like in the first or second quintile. And really, you know, it's a pretty good story up until you're in the quintile that we're in right now. Just a lot of crazy stuff is going on. Now, another thing that people aren't really talking about or don't really talk about too much is something called the dot plots. Now, what the dot plot is, and again, hopefully you guys, oh, looks like I scrolled off of that. So what the dot plots are is the Federal Reserve governors are estimating where they think the federal funds rate, so that's the rate that the banks charge to lend each other overnight, where they think that rate is going to be. And so this was going back to 2012. They were saying that, you know, by 2014, you know maybe look at this saying, okay, or maybe, you know, let's call it a little over one. And then we go to 2015, and the consensus was that essentially 3 years ago, we would have been at 4%. Now, not only were we not at 4%, that we were actually still at zero at that point. Then you fast forward to 2014, and what they were saying, you see this upward trajectory, and they're saying, okay, by 2017, so let's call it a year ago, we'd be at 3.75%. Then you go to 2016, still an upward sloping trend over here. And what you can see is that, you know, it looks like we're going to be closer to, you know, call it 2.75% by 2018. Now, the one that just came out recently, and again, if I scroll over here, you guys can see the trajectory. And this is really the first time that I've noticed this change where if you go to 2020 over here, it actually, 2021, you're actually looking, oh, this is really cool. I didn't realize it even has the median projection. So they're saying by 2020 that the rate would be 3.0625 on average. But then it slopes downward, meaning, you know, it peaks and then it goes back down. Whereas all the other ones you see, you know, definitive, you know, obviously, you know, this is a real big upward slope. I know, obviously an upward slope there, upward slope here. But now the new one is showing there's not an upward slope. And so one thing that I've been saying all along, and again, this is not to say, look at me, I've been saying this all along. This is to show that, you know, I do know what I'm talking about. And my entire thesis this entire time has really been that, I'm not sure, I'm going to see if we can get myself back on the screen over here. You know, the thesis that I've had the entire time was, you know, when rates start going up, that is the actual very bad news that people should be fearing, because we have $20 trillion in debt, which doesn't include Social Security or Medicare, which is a larger obligation than Social Security, believe it or not. And the interest on the debt would be so high, because that's just the Fed funds rate is the rate the banks charge to lend money to each other overnight. That's not the rate that the government borrows money at. The government, when the rate was 0 to 0.25, was actually borrowing money closer to like 2 or 3%. So if the rate was actually 3 or 4%, as they suggested, you know, it would be a few years ago, that they said, you know, it'd be by, you know, 2015 by now, you know, 3 years ago. If the rate was 4%, that means the government probably had to borrow at 7. So what, you're talking, you know, well over $1 trillion a year in interest, which then that interest then starts compounding on itself. And, you know, really it's a game over scenario at that point. So this is something where, you know, I remember when I, you know, first moved to Arizona, I wrote one of you guys an email, and probably a few of you, we've had these conversations about, and the email said, you know, hey, the Fed's in a rock and a hard place. It's of their own choosing, but, you know, there's really no way out of the situation. So they sort of have to fake it until they make it. Now, one thing that's been going on, and I'm going to, you know, try to find this while I've got you guys here, is the Federal Reserve, I'm fearing that they're really starting to lose control of the interest rate situation. So you're seeing, you know, the 10-year treasury shooting up quite a bit. It's getting close to 3%. So, I mean, just like a year ago, I think it was, and again, we went off the cuff here, I think it was like 1.62 or very, very low. So you've almost seen it double. Well, we being the Federal Reserve, has only rolled off a very, very small amount of bonds from its balance sheet. So what they've been doing the past several years is they've been buying bonds and buying their own bonds because nobody else would buy them. Now, what they've said they're going to do is that they're going to actually start selling off their balance sheet. Now, of course, I've got this figure pulled up on my other computer sitting here, but they have only been able to roll off, let me find the exact number. They've only been able to roll off somewhere to the tune of, just a second here, $48 billion. And so they have $4.4 trillion that they need to roll off. They've rolled off $48 billion, and that has set the market into absolute turmoil. So that's like you're 500 pounds and you lost 5 pounds. So now you're sitting at 495 and you're like, oh man, like I can never do this. This is the end. I need to go back to, Twinkies and, sitting on the couch today. This 5 pounds is just crazy. Because 5 pounds, that would be 1%. And, 48 billion out of 4.4 trillion is about 1%. And, hey guys, we got another 99% to go. And the easy part should be the first 1%. That's the easy part. Let's say you're overweight and if you're 500 pounds, maybe the first, 80 pounds would be the easy part. And then, then it gets progressively harder and harder. Well, we're not even at the 100 pound mark right now. We're at the, you've lost 5 pounds mark, and they've already, it's already set the market into complete chaos. And, and sort of see how I see things playing out is that eventually they will lose control of the bond rate. It doesn't matter what they make as Fed fund rates. They can make the Fed funds back down to zero if they wanted to. If the market isn't willing to accept that rate, then eventually that rate would have to go higher to entice people to buy the bonds. Now, what I think may be happening, again, this is all hypothetical and no guarantees on any of this, but I think eventually they're going to lose control of the interest rate situation, and then that's going to create a calamity in the stock market. And then in order to be able to finance the debt, they're going to have to start launching more quantitative easing programs, which is fancy code word for printing money. And then when we start printing more money, then that's going to be the shot heard across the world, which is then going to be very, very bad for the US dollar. Now, again, I don't know the timing on all this stuff. Sort of surprised that it's lasted as long as it has, but it's sort of like, it's like a spring right now. We've been holding down the spring. Well, you hold it down long enough, it's going to explode even higher. And that's really how I see things sort of shaking out. Again, since I'm not technically licensed for the next 3 weeks, I can't, advise on how to play this or recommend it, but I just want to let you know that your advisor is thinking about this. And I'm not really worried. I'm not, I know that, all this could happen tomorrow, and, I could still go outside and put on a pair of running shoes or go ride my bike, and sun's still going to be shining, and you guys will still have your families, and hopefully we'll be even in a better situation, because I hope to ultimately be profiting off all this. Again, I'm not excited for it to happen. I have a lot of empathy for, what's going to happen for a lot of people. But, I think that ultimately this is where a lot of money is to be made. So, I think this is a story that's not really echoed very much in the mainstream. And a lot of people think that things are going really well. Well, if things are going really well, you wouldn't have a Fed funds rate. You'd have a Fed funds rate that'd be closer to 4 or 5% by now. And another part of my theory that I've had all along is that, and why I called the presentation why good news is bad news in relation to Donald Trump, is because ultimately, if there is all this good news, well, then the Federal Reserve doesn't have cover to not raise rates. And so not having cover to raise rates, that means that the good news will then lead to the bad news, because the bad news is the rates going up, because ultimately that means we're not going to be able to afford the interest payments, which ultimately, I think will be a good story for some of the gold miners, some of the precious metals, some of the commodities. Not in the beginning. I think Bitcoin, when all this stuff goes down, I think Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies will go down probably even more than other assets. But I think once they start turning on the printing press, then the ones that are worth it will then go back up. And obviously, there's a lot of BS cryptocurrencies that are out there. There's lots of scams. There's lots of Ponzi schemes. There's lots of fraudsters. And just like the dot-com bubble, there was a lot of pets.coms. There's a lot of BS. There's a lot of companies with no substance and just, catchy names. But if you held on to Amazon, yeah, you would have lost a lot of money temporarily. But then they would, now it's sitting at, I don't even know, like 1,400, something like that. I think it went down over 90% when it crashed. But, if you held on to that, or Apple or Google or some of the other ones, you ended up making a killing. It's just, for those of you who are close to retirement, we just need to make sure that we've got you in a position where you're not going to have to draw down on those assets, and we're going to be able to give them time to recover. One of the websites I made was called sequenceofreturnsrisk.com, risk.com, where it basically lays this scenario out. Because I do see a lot of this happening. You know, I don't think that I'm the crazy one. I think a lot of people who were echoing some of these sentiments, maybe they didn't know exactly what I'm saying, but they had a bad overall feel of what was going on. And a lot of those people have capitulated. A lot of those people have, you know, thrown in the towel. They're, you know, full hog, you know, into the stock market, believing the mainstream media narrative on this. And I think those of you who are, you know, patient and who trust me and who are going to play this out, you know, the right way, or what I deem to be the right way, I think we're going to be, you know, better for it. That's what, so I'm not worried. I'm not, you know, I used to be very, very stressed out about this, but you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. And so I'm not worried about things I can't control. It's just that depending on how this shakes out, you know, we might need to zig, or if it shakes out another way, we might need to zag. And, you know, I've got plans in place and how to zig and how to zag. And just, that's just one thing I want to let people know. And again, it's not coming from a place of arrogance, not coming from a place of, you know, see, look how smart I am, I told you so. It's coming from a place of, you know, I care about you guys and want to make sure that we help protect your retirement. What I'm going to do now is I wanted to go over some different stats, and really no particular order, to really kind of paint the picture of what I think is going on and trying to get, okay. So here what we're looking at is central bank asset purchases. And so really, if everything was going great, you know, why would all the central banks around the world, and this is actually just showing the Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, and the Bank of Japan, how much their assets has increased. And what's actually sort of stunning is if you go down to this chart over here, is in the red line we have the S&P 500, and in the blue we have those three central banks. And you see that they pretty closely mirror one another. And really one of my big concerns all along has been, well, you know, if things are going so great, then why are all these programs going on? Well, one thing that's very important to note is that, you know, really over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months, we're going to go from a point in time where you're going to have, where we were having close to $2 trillion per year injected into the worldwide economy. And again, that can then be levered up another 10 times because of fractional reserve banking. So it's more like 20 trillion is what the effect is, to close to zero. And actually, it's a little bit even worse than that, because now not only are we talking about not buying bonds anymore, we're actually also talking about then having to sell bonds. So the Federal Reserve right now is already in the act of selling bonds, which, you know, again, we've only seen a tiny, again, 1% roll off. And that's when we've seen all this, all hell start breaking loose. And now every quarter, the Federal Reserve is going to start selling more and more bonds. At the same time, and again, I didn't even really prep for this right here, but at the same time, you know, Trump, I think they're projecting close to a $1 trillion deficit this year. We just had a trade deficit last month of about $53 billion, which was almost, you know, at like the height, I think, of the Great Recession. I think it was like $60 billion-ish. So we're not too far off from where we're at the height of the recession in terms of that metric. Now, another thing I wanted to go, and oh, I'm trying to flip screens over here, is when we're taking a look at central bank asset purchases. This is the Swiss National Bank. So they weren't even included in that. So the Swiss own, let's see, Apple. They've got $3 billion in Apple, $2.5 billion in Microsoft, $2.2 billion in Amazon, Facebook. So these are called, you know, the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple. I guess I don't see Netflix on here. But, you know, you've got the Swiss Central Bank owns, you know, I saw one metric that said they own $40,000 per family of four of U.S. stocks. And then I met a guy from Switzerland who's like, no, you're actually wrong. That was an old number. It's actually 80,000. So, okay, whether it's 40,000 or 80,000, they're all ridiculous numbers to me. And then you've got the Bank of Japan. They own 75% of the Japanese ETFs. One of the largest holdings is the Bank of Japan. So again, that is actual fascism going on, where you have the central banks printing money out of thin air and then buying up private corporations. Now, where this is also seen is the European Central Bank. This is a chart where it shows, again, this is about 6 months old, where it shows the credit spreads going down, meaning it's cheaper for the European companies to start issuing debt. Well, the reason why it's cheaper is because the central bank is the one that's buying the debt. Again, I mean, by most people's definitions, that would be actual fascism going on, but nobody's talking about that. So you've got companies like Deutsche Bank who have no business at all selling their bonds for the price they're selling them at, but they're able to you know, perpetuate and make this last longer because the central bank is in there distorting the market and buying things up. Now, speaking of buying things up, you've got companies are buying back stocks at a record pace because of the Trump tax break. So companies, instead of, you know, investing that money in themselves, are literally buying back their own stock while their stock is also sitting over at record levels. And again, I don't think that that's, you know, a great thing to do long term for these companies. And what it also does is it paints a rosier picture of what's going on, because, you know, let's say you used to have a million shares outstanding and now you have 900,000 shares outstanding. Well, your earnings per share, even if the revenue stayed the same, could go up by 10% strictly for the fact that now you've got 10% less stock outstanding. But what the companies are also doing is they're issuing record amounts of debt, and then that debt, they're using debt to then buy back their own stock, and they're buying back the stock at record prices. And so there's a lot of things that are going on to distort the market. Now, I already mentioned the trade deficit, and you know, let me actually try to pull it up. So we got Fred, trade deficit. And again, you guys pay me for this stuff, so I don't expect, you know, anyone to, you know, be going over here and trying to look at this. But for anyone that cares, it's called the Federal Reserve Economic Database. They refer to it as FRED, and that's really a great spot where you can find information. So I'm trying to see if it's scrolling over to the main screen right now. Let me bear with me just a second over here. Okay, so we got the trade balance of FRED, and if I remember correctly, this is an inverted graph, meaning the lower the number is, the bottom, or the you know, the worst case the picture really is. So again, we're just waiting for, okay, so again, you know, the lower this goes, the worse the trade deficit is. So zero would be at the top over here. And again, it's been a long time since we were at zero. But let's go back to the recession. So May 2018, you know, right before everything hit the fan, you're looking at, so if we go back, last time it was at 53, we're looking at, you know, I guess even 2004, you know, it was running deficits in the height of the recession, negative $60 billion. And now we're looking at, $53 billion. And again, these are numbers that will probably end up being revised back, but not a great thing. Another thing that's not great is the personal savings rate. The personal savings rate right now is like 2.6, I think. Okay, it's 3.2. Again, I saw some numbers that was even lower than that. So, okay, you know, 3.2, you know, we're talking, you know, a year or two before the recession kicked in. I mean, depending on what part of the country you were in, I mean, here in Arizona, again, I was living in New York at the time, but, you know, things were already starting to go down in 2006 from a housing standpoint. So again, the personal savings have collapsed. And sort of my thesis is, well, if everything is going so great, then how come people aren't able to save more money? I mean, certainly, you know, it's obviously not all going into Bitcoin, because that's only $500 trillion market. And so you're seeing the trade deficits exploding. You're seeing the budget deficits exploding. And actually, they're not even projecting out to balance the budget in 10 years. I mean, at least back in the day, I'm old enough to remember that they at least used to have like this like ruse that we would balance the budget, you know, 10 years down the future, down the road, and with all these economic projections. Well, now they're projecting, you know, we're going to go 10 years without a recession, and we're going to, you know, marching forward, and we're still not even going to have a balanced budget, even by their own projections, which is just absolutely crazy. Because I mean, right now, I think we're in the second or third longest recovery ever. I believe it's the second longest recovery ever. I think the only one that maybe beat out this one was the 90s tech boom that ended because of 9/11. That's really, I think, the only time that that lasted longer than this. So we're trying to say we're going to have double, essentially the longest one ever, with no recessions or no downturns between now and then. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. Now, another thing that's kind of crazy is people are saying, okay, well, you know, Donald Trump had an amazing first year, and he did. He accomplished a lot of things, you know, a lot more than, you know, a lot of people would give him credit for. But, you know, they're making it out to seem like the economy is doing amazing. Well, you know, the last 4 years of Obama, the economy was growing at more than 2.3%. I believe his average, I think his average was 2.2. And Trump's first year, it was 2.3. So again, I don't know how you can say 2.2 is economic stagnation and, you know, everything is going to hell in a handbasket, but 2.3 is like, you know, a new day for America. Everything is saved, because there was actually a few And I can probably go look this up right now on the Fred website. But if we go back to annualized GDP, and there were several years with Obama where it was more than 2.3, so meaning that he did a better job than Trump. So I just want to, again, everyone knows I'm not an Obama fan. You know, I'm becoming less and less of a Trump fan every day as he's promulgating some of this fake news. But actually, no, the GDP is showing me the actual dollar amount on this graph, not the percentage. But I know for a fact that Obama had two or three that, and sort of, I don't think it was his last, I think it was like 15 and 14 where he was over 2.3, which was Trump was at. So, you know, I'm just trying to be consistent and saying you can't call, you know, 2.2 horrible, but then somehow say 2.3 is like amazing, especially given the fact that that he being Obama had several years where it was above that. And again, I mean, economics 101 is that a president can do very little in 1 year to actually get things going, and you know, they can do things to screw things up, but it's very hard to have them, you know, have any meaningful change. And another problem I have is that the anybody can go cut taxes. These aren't really true tax reforms, in my opinion. A tax reform would be moving from maybe an income tax to a consumption tax, or maybe having different tariffs instead. And this is not having an income tax and tariffs. It's just using tariffs. And the reason I bring that up is because today Trump reiterated that we'd have some sort of steel and aluminum tariff, which is something I was talking about 14 months ago in the original Trump presentation, where, you know, he was campaigning that he was going to have these sort of tariffs. And really what it is, it's a tax on the American consumer. If China or Japan or anybody else wants to sell us their stuff cheaper, well, then we should be taking advantage of that misallocation of capital and bringing in the goods cheaper. I mean, all it means is it's going to cost American consumers more money in order to purchase steel, purchase those raw materials. And, you know, at a certain point, I mean, the rest of the world's really getting, and this is another point that I had actually in the slide, where, I mean, it's the rest of the world that's getting, and actually, let me just try to find that slide. Just 1 second here. All right, let's turn this back on. All right, so again, this is, and then here's another chart that shows central bank asset purchases. Again, you know, this is a year old at this point, but you know, a lot of these are going to stop within the next year and a half. So at that point, things could get pretty interesting. But let me see. Okay, all right, my computer is trying to catch up to me. So yeah, so this was January 2017 when I made this. I'm saying tax reform is much needed, but it will not be easy to pass. Again, I don't think what we had, what Trump just passed, I would not call that tax reform. He did nothing to cut the budget. Government's going to expand this year. Government's going to get bigger this year. The revenues probably aren't going to go up to as much as the deficit to counteract that. And I'm also saying, you know, people are putting way too much faith that the GOP will all of a sudden just go pass all of his proposals. Again, I mean, the GOP are the swamp. A lot of them would have rather had Hillary in there. A lot of them are swamp creatures. And I mentioned healthcare reform will, you know, should help consumers, but it's going to take a while to be implemented. Well, we just saw that, you know, basically hardly anything has been done on that front. You know, the market went up trillions of dollars off of hopes of an infrastructure play, but they said, again, that's going to be $1 trillion over 10 years. And here's where I mentioned potential trade wars and currency wars. Again, that's from 14 years ago, and I'm not sure why my computer keeps flipping off of that. But right now I talked about, you know, the U.S. benefits by we're able to exchange our debt. So, you know, we have other countries buy our debt. In exchange, we get actual goods. So, I mean, who's getting the raw end of this deal? I mean, if you actually think about it, you know, it's the other countries that are the ones that are getting the bad end of this deal, because it's the other countries that are actually giving us real goods, and we're giving them pictures of paper with dead people printed on it saying, you know, trust us, we're going to pay you back. And we're going to pay him back, but it's going to be with devalued dollars. And that's the name of the game. I see, you know, that being the case as basically as clear as day. And again, you know, I do think that this is going to play out. You know, there's a certain way that this is ultimately going to play out. And it's really the bond market that people need to, you know, be paying attention to. But you know, in the long run, you know, in the short run, I think the stock market or the bond market will be the better place to go to play this in a short-term perspective. longer term perspective, I think that that would be the worst place to go. That'd be the worst place to keep. Your money will be in cash long term. Again, multiple different ways to play this out. And one of the examples I like to use, and I'm not looking at a chart right now or anything, but if you were a German citizen in 1900, you had the Goldmark, Renmark, Reichsmark, Deutschmark, and if you had, you know, $100 sitting in Goldmark, well, you know, you were probably paid back, a few cents on the dollar when it got converted to Renmark, then a few cents on the dollar converted to Reichsmark, and then a few cents on the dollar converted to Deutschmark. But if you're holding on to Mercedes-Benz stock or, and you had 100 shares priced in Goldmark, well, then now you had, maybe because of dividends and capital gains, maybe now you had 102 shares priced in Renmark and maybe 103 shares priced in Reichsmark, but you held on to your purchasing power. So that is my bullish case for the stock market, is that things are going to get so bad, they're going to print so much money that it's going to make the market go up, not because companies are doing great, not because we made America great again, but because we started the printing presses again. And that's also my long-term bullish case for some of these cryptocurrencies, because in the future, and to some extent already, all cash already is digital. And do you want cash as tracked, traced, surveilled, controlled by the government, you're dissenting from them and now they can turn you off? Or do you want one that's decentralized, there's no figurehead to go from, like, yeah, they can come after me, they can come after you, they can pick a few people off here and there, but what they can't do is they can't go after everybody. There's no figurehead to go after. You're literally have to shut down the internet, you have to shut down the entire electrical grid in order to, but if they do that, then, we've got much bigger problems to worry about than, and then your cash would also be affected because that's digital as well. So unless you're holding on to gold bars or, and probably not gold bars, probably, some silver, I think they call it like junk silver, the pre-1964 silver rounds, and you're going to use that for barter, but unless you've got a system like that, you've got much bigger problems to worry about. Again, I don't really put anything past these people, but I see we're in a situation where, the noose is getting tighter and tighter and tighter around our neck. A lot of people just want to focus on all the things that are going on positive. And what I'm really trying to do is take a look at, everyone's looking at like the micro of, what's going on this second. What did this person say? What did that person say? What did the new Fed chair, Jerome Powell, what did he say? And ultimately, I don't care what any of these people say, because I know what the market's ultimately going to say. And so on a minute-by-minute basis, I don't really care because I already know what's baked into this cake. I have a good idea of how this is going to play out. And, that's really my job, is to make sure that I can help you guys through all this. So for my clients that are watching this, also want to reiterate that I just sent out a link for eMoney. So that is the non-proprietary version of Wealth Vision. Or I guess better way of saying that, Wealth Vision was a proprietary version of eMoney. And so that would be a way. And so don't go in there and get all alarmed that, that the screen's blank right now. Your money's not gone. What you have to do is you have to go in, click add account. You can go to, just type in LPL and then type in your credentials for my account view online.com. And then that will bring in your LPL account. Because again, I don't have access to that right now, so I can't even turn that on. But eventually, when your money's at TD, then I would have a data feed over there. But again, I'm not with TD officially right now. I'm still waiting on the state of Arizona to process Innovative Advisory Group's Arizona registration, at which point we can start rocking and rolling again. But I appreciate everybody for watching this. Again, if you have people who are close to retirement and they aren't hearing this message, please feel free to share this with them, because I think you're gonna do them a big favor. And it's not enough to say, I told you so. You want to be proactive on this, and I think you do have the chance to help some of your friends out. You do have the chance to help some of your family members out. And it's the ones who are either very close to retirement or just retired are the ones who are going to be infected by this. If you're, you're 25 years old, 35, 45, doesn't really matter. You've got time to wait this out. But if you're, 57, 62, 64, 65, you don't know somebody like me, and you aren't thinking of this, and you don't know anything that I just told you about, then I would be worried for you. But I know I'm not worried. I know I still sleep soundly at night. And really, my main goal is to make sure I'm taking care of all you guys. And, if you guys ever need anything, let me know. You know how to get a hold of me. Feel free to schedule yourself. I'm doing a lot of virtual meetings right now. So we can do a Zoom meeting, which is sort of like a go-to meeting. I've probably done with most of you here. And you'll be able to see my screen. I can see you. We can have a good dialogue. And the best part is, you don't have to go get in your car to even do that. So Hope you guys have a great weekend, and hope you like this. Let me know, you know, what you did like about this. Let me know what you didn't like about this. Let me know topics you'd like me to talk about in the future, and we can go at it that way. But thank you very much, and hope you guys have a great